Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Hey, welcome back to episode 39 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's your boy Julian, and I'm straight from the garden. That is Madison Square Garden, the best arena in the world. And unfortunately, the Knicks put up one of the worst showings in the world tonight. I will preface this by saying the starters did sit. So it was just Mike Brown trying to figure out the bench rotation, which looks like he put zero to no effort in tonight. We played the Washington Wizards. We went down by 30 pretty early. We almost pushed 40. They were shooting, the Wizards that is, were shooting up over 70% for most of the night. Deuce McBride couldn't hit the ocean with a basketball. Jordan Clarkson, it was a turnover machine. We had nobody that could grab a rebound. We have that French guy from the Olympics that dunked on LeBron on our team. He put up a pretty mediocre showing. Point is, the Knicks in this form, in terms of trying to find a steady bench rotation, look just as bad, if not worse, than last year, which is tough to a tough pill to swallow. I will say, I believe, at least from the first three preseason games, that Josh Hart will come off the bench for us, which will improve us a bit, but he's not the takeover, give me the ball score guy. He's a facilitator. So if he's supposed to lead that second unit, who is he facilitating for? There's no real scorer in that unit. So don't want to lead with too much basketball, but I do want to bring this up because the highlight of the game tonight did not come from neither the Wizards or the Knicks. It came from one of those little in-between timeout games, and this was the tic-tac-toe. Now, if you haven't been to a Knicks game or if you've just never been to an NBA game, in between timeouts, they always do these like fun little activities, keep the crowd engaged, especially when the home team's getting their ass kicked, as was the case tonight. They put on center court this massive, a giant tic-tac-toe board. And what you have to do is two people get a ball at half court. They have to dribble down, do a layup, grab the piece, and then slam it on the board and repeat until the first person to get three in a row. Usually during this game, there's somebody that is proficient in basketball, knows how to dribble, can move up and down the court and do a layup, while the other contestant is laggy, draggy, and it's usually just a blowout. It's never that close. Tonight was the exception. Tonight's timeout game was significantly the most exciting part of the night. It was the loudest crowd pop of the night. The arena erupted. I thought we were all over it and ready to go home into our prospective boroughs. But these two gentlemen, I do not know their names. I already saw House of Highlights posted them. I'm sure Bleacher Report will as well. It was the best part. So let's go through this. They both first layup down, slam their first piece. They're pacing at the same time. Second piece down, pacing at the same time. Now they're both grabbing the ball to do the final layup. White guy versus black guy, by the way. So you know who we're rooting for. Black guy breaks right. White guy breaks left. They both make it at the same time. They both go to grab the piece. Well, what happened is the guy giving the ball to the black guy in the layup kind of dropped it and fumbled it, which really bit him in the ass. So they're running back to grab their pieces. The black guy gets his, the white guy gets his at the same time. And then the white guy jumps across the board as the black dude is putting his piece down. The white guy lunges like full on, like reaching for the pylon to touch the football to get the score with your knees still in the air. He gets parallel with the Knicks court and slams it at the same time, blocking the other guy's piece with his rib, with his bite, takes the blow to the side, pause, and just absorbs the impact of the guy's piece. Pause again. That is crazy. As the guy slams the piece down, and the crowd goes crazy. And they do, of course, amazing work by the production team. Immediately put that on the jumbo up above, and the whole stadium sees it in real time, and then they do it in slow-mo. And everybody's like, ah! Crazy. And what I love about this is obviously I'm alluding to making this like a fake little race war, but what I love about this is both guys, like, they immediately get up and like hug, and it was just like an awesome moment. And small things like that go a long way. We need to see more interactions like that. Two strangers coming together in a competitive spirit in the world's greatest arena, having the spotlight on them, knowing that they completely owned and dominated the moment, and they both did not disappoint. They both delivered. And mind you, all of that, that lunging and diving and putting your body on the line like that in the garden, that was all just for $250. That's how you just competitive. You can't, there's no price on competitiveness and taking advantage of your moment for the love of the game. So shout out to those two guys. That was a significantly best part of the night. As for the Knicks, we'll be better. Jalen Brunson was there. Karl-Anthony Towns was there, as was Mikal Bridges. But they were all in street clothes. I didn't see any of the other guys that were there. Josh Hart was not in the building. I didn't see Mitch or any of those guys. But, you know, they'll be back. Nothing to worry about. I'm putting this out there. We are the favorite in the East. I think we're going to win the East this year. I'm going to put this out, episode 39. The New York Knicks will win the East. This is before. This is directly after our blowout loss in game 4 of the preseason. But I'm going to put this out there, speaking that good juju, put it in the atmosphere. Let's go, Knicks. I bought this hat tonight, by the way. This was like the last piece of Knicks merch that I really wanted, just a simple white dad hat. I have a few Knicks beanies, but this is like my first real hat. And I also got new glasses. I bought some things this week, guys. Daddy's doing all right. Let's jump into some music news. The biggest story of the week is Drake. This lawsuit over Kendrick has been dismissed. Now, if you've been living under a rock for the last year or so, Drake filed this lawsuit. In January, it was that long ago, about a defamation. Here it is. Here we go. The record label behind both records. He's suing Universal Music Group, by the way, UMG. The record label behind both rappers of defamation by allowing the song to be published and promoted, saying it spread a, quote, false and malicious narrative. No way. Lying in rap. Drake's spokesperson said he will appeal against the ruling. UMG said it was pleased with the outcome and was looking forward to continuing its relationship with the Canadian star. So, look, UMG's over it. They just want to continue. They just want Drake to put out more music, continue to make music off, have him make music and make money off of him. And they anticipate him obviously making more money as well. They really want to move past this. Doesn't seem like Drake and his team are willing to do so. But let's go into why. Let's hear some words from the judge here. So let's read some of this here. Not Like Us was released in May 2004, was widely seen as a decisive blow in the ongoing battle. Yes, we can establish, again, for the 100,000th time, say it with me, Drake lost the battle. Carry on. And has become the biggest hit of Lamar's career, has won 5 Grammys, da-da-da-da-da. In the 38-page order, Judge Vargas called the row between the rappers, quote, the most infamous rap battle in genre's history. Cool. The judge said, quote, although the accusation... the plaintiff is a pedophile is certainly a serious one. The broader context of a heated rap battle with incendiary language and offensive accusations hurled by both participants would not incite the reasonable listener to believe that, quote, not like us, imparts variable facts about the plaintiff, meaning the song itself, just because it's calling Drake an accusatory and calling him a pedophile, doesn't in fact mean that he is. It's up for interpretation. It's a matter of opinion in the heat of a rap battle. Obviously, Drake took extreme offense to that because of the reaction from the general public, saw that the opinion, which is baseless outside of, like, you know, the few pieces of things that people were scraping together on the internet to make this claim, the seismic shift that this record had over the entire industry piled on Drake enough to have him to feel like he's validated enough to push this claim forward, even though it was denied. Drake, his real name is Aubrey Graham. His lawyer, Drake's lawyer, this is, accused UMG of launching a, quote, campaign to create a viral hit, end quote, of a song that made, quote, false accusations that Drake is a criminal pedophile. Again, Drake and your lawyers, no one is saying that these claims are true. These are opinions, and opinions can be accusatory and inflammatory, just as the ones you made about Kendrick Lamar. Like when you said his literal business partner and best friend fucked his wife and his kid isn't his. That's just as bad. Problem is, yours didn't stick. Kendrick stuck. You can't be mad that your bomb was faulty while Kendrick had a fucking landmine that just blew up the whole lot. It's not his fault, nor is it yours. I guess it's partially yours. Just make a better song. Here we go. Regarding Lamar's song, Judge Vargas said, quote, here's another quote from the judge. Even apparent statements of fact may assume the character of statements of opinion when made in public debate, heated labor dispute, or circumstances in which an audience may anticipate the use of epithets, fiery rhetoric, or hyperbole. Ding, ding, ding. Wow. It's amazing when you have someone that is proficient in litigation speak on a matter that could be not more clear and cut. You don't need to be. There's this whole like, there were so many people in the hip hop sphere, the talking head sphere, that were debating like, has this crossed the line of hip hop? Is this too far? Have we lost who we are? Nah, this is all fun and love and war and all that shit. In the eyes of the law, the legal ledger of law, this is fair. And we always talk about the hip hop's what's tougher than hip hop. There's no rules in hip hop. We have a judge that needs to say it as clear as day that yes, everything that was said from both parties is acceptable, not only in the rules of hip hop, but also within the court of law, at least for now, because obviously our freedom of speech has been under attack, but that seems to be under attack for a certain group of people about a certain subject as well. So unless Kendrick started to make fun of a very specific part of Drake's identity, then I don't see a lawsuit sticking. But calling the man a pedophile, clearly we're also in the era of protecting such people. Epstein and his crew, I'd say sail off into the sunset, but Epstein sailed off on a rope. Ghislaine is in Camp Cupcake, but we're also never going to release those files. So maybe I should swallow my words. I take some of this back. If Kendrick did want to have trouble with Drake, he would have attacked a very specific part of Drake's identity. I'm not going to say it. The Kanye shrug insert here. However, what Kendrick did attack, pedophiles, have seemingly also been protected. But Drake is not only not an actual pedophile, I'm not even putting that on him, but nor does he fall within the camp of the ones that are being currently being protected. It's very shitty how all of that somehow makes sense. But here we are. Drake, not one to take a loss lightly, I mentioned earlier, is not going to go away. They are going to appeal. We'll see. I expect this appeal to get denied. I think in this case, the best case scenario for Drake is to have some form of settlement, because the settlement in the eyes of many that are pro-Drake in this dispute, we'll see a settlement as an admission of an L of sorts for Kendrick, or just a matter of like Drake taking at least some of the power back. Regardless of if the appeal is upheld and Drake wins or settles in any manner, I do not think that changes the general public opinion. To be honest, I think most people are long over this. Drake is still in the rollout of this Iceman album. Not sure how much this lawsuit will, if at all, affect this rollout. Haven't seen him do a live stream of any nature recently, but keeping an eye out for the album. I saw a brief headline when I was looking up research about this topic that academics said it's a classic. Coming from him, that doesn't mean much. But again, excited. If it's good, it's good. Everyone wants great Drake music, so no one's complaining there. Really looking forward to hearing from him. To close the loop on Drake, and sorry, I sound a little hoarse. My mouth is now like deathly dry because I took these cold like Z-Cam tablets, which are like basically chewing chalk, and it has just wiped all the moisture out of my mouth. Pause. Like water isn't doing it. I am really drinking a lot of water over here, and it has had zero effect on my mouth and its wetness. Crazy talk right now. Okay. Adonis turns 8. Nasty transition. I'm sorry, guys. We're just gonna roll with it. Pretend I didn't say that last sentence before this. Adonis is 8. Happy birthday to Adonis. It was cute to see him and his little theme birthday. Looked like a little Western theme. Drake's mother was there, Sandy, as was Dennis, Drake's father, Dennis Graham. I don't care too much about that. Drake had his baby mama there and cut the cake and all that. We could speed through that stuff. The only comment I have about this birthday And congrats to the happy family coming together, at least for this occasion on camera. Very cute of them. My question is more so to Adonis is 8. He's at that age now where he can, he's opinionated. He can think freely, and he also is, surrounded by other kids that are seeing things and hearing things. And I'm sure within the confines of his own home, he's protected and is told very specific things about his father and his upbringing. But when you're at school or interacting with other kids, like I'm wondering at what point do kids start to get in his ear, if it hasn't already happened already, about the more, not even the Kendrick stuff, more so the Pusha T stuff, about Adonis. When is Adonis going to, I guess what I'm asking is, when is Adonis going to find out that another rapper bullied him into being like a public father? And I know obviously Adonis and Drake's relationship spanned longer than when the public found out, but there is that reputation. There is that, public perception that Drake had to father him publicly once Pusha T outed him. Just curious. 8 is super young, nor do I think Adonis should be having to see these things or consume that kind of content. It's got to be brutal to see those kind of stories about your father. Just a thought that I had in passing, so just keep an eye out for that. Shout out to Adonis, though. 8 is a special year. I remember my 8th birthday. It was a good time. On to local news, but staying in the legal realm. Diddy was sentenced to a little over 4 years for what did he get charged? Like prostitute, some bullshit. The sentence was the middle ground between the prosecution's request for 11 years and the defense's team's plea for 14 months. Represented a significant blow to the music mogul. I don't know if that's true. Significant blow per se. I mean, 4 years isn't light, but like for what he did, it's not bad. After suffering decades of tidal wave success, Combs faced apocalyptic legal challenges over the past year, enduring not only the closely watched federal trial, but an onslaught of civil cases alleging years of sexual abuse. As the Me Too movement enters a tumultuous new era, experts seem torn about what Combs' case changes, if anything. My 2 cents on this is I don't think Combs' case changes anything. I think his case, if anything, validates what we've already known. People that have a lot of influence and a lot of power will always get a way out of their wrongdoings, out of the hellish and devilish things that he did to people, countless of victims. We don't even need to go through all the stuff that they found and the people and the testimonies. There's always a common through line in these cases, and the through line is money and power. Diddy, to his credit, earned his way into that category to not only have enough money, but also have enough power to get a pretty small sentence, even after all that he's done. This is the direct byproduct of a capitalist society. Time and time again, we always tell ourselves that there are morals and we have this guiding principle to each other and all the stuff that we're told and said to believe as normal people, as middle class, as lower middle class, even as the upper class to an extent. When you hit that uber wealthy, that class, that so far fetched class, it's a different game and they play by different rules. And unfortunately, more often than not, the victims of the games that they play are those that are in the classes that are below them at their feet. I brought up Epstein earlier, but it's the disposable, the women that Epstein was targeting were broke and most even homeless. When you bring those people into the upper hyper wealthy tier, you're nothing more than a pawn, and you're a victim at the disposal of the elites. So it sucks. I think Diddy got a great deal, and it's a sad day for the justice system. I really do think like things like these cases and these incidences just are time and time again like a blow to the to the chest of the average American who, you know, works hard, is trying to raise a family. Shit, even if you can afford it, like I see the average age to buy a home now in this country is like what, 38 or 40, which is like, I believe it was 26, however some odd years ago, not too long ago. We have a real life to focus on, and we're doing it the right way, making money the ethical way, paying taxes, contributing to our local communities, you know, and making, knocking off our credit card debt to make sure we don't have all these overages. And meanwhile, these people with enough money to fund a country are, you know, stripping people of their dignity and of their innocence for a quick fix, and then disposing of them. And then when they get caught up in some nonsense, they are quickly, it's a catch and release. They're let off the hook. Whereas if you make a minor offense or if you miss a month on rent, there's it's not catch and release. You're immediately thrown in the boat to flop around and bleed out. So I don't like this sentencing. I don't agree with the sentencing. And all this does is this continue to enable people that are in Diddy's position to continue to act in very harmful ways towards others. So fuck you and the company you keep, Diddy. And I'll leave it at that. Let's start with, let's do something a little lighter. I finally saw, I've had a quite a busy week, to be honest, which I can get into in a little bit. But I do want to talk about, I saw one battle after another, and I saw it on Friday night. Oh, guys, you know I'm a movie guy. You know I love film. I'm a sucker for a good movie. Paul Thomas Anderson directed this. If you're not familiar, this is the new Leonardo DiCaprio film that has Tiana Taylor, Sean Penn, the young girl, Chase Infinity, who plays Leo and Tiana's daughter, who's incredible. Regina Hall is also in this. Wood Harris, whom I met earlier in the week at this conference thing that I went to. Just a really great cast. Benicio Del Toro, I have to name him as well. It is a long, long film, nearly 3 hours, 2 hours, 50 minutes. It paces really well. There's a real, a couple things I want to highlight. Let me just nerd out real quick. It opens with like a jazzy, and it's very like, it's like the heartbeat of the film is the score that underlies the entire thing. And in moments, there are actual songs as well that like come in, and I believe Steely Dan is played, and I fucking lost my mind in my seat when I heard Steely Dan. I love them. But the rhythm of the movie, that between scenes and the pacing of the music with the visual to match, is so cool. Like the movie, the soundtrack in itself, not even the soundtrack, like the score of the film as a heartbeat. And it is just, the way that the audio mixing is done is beautiful, because it's pretty constant throughout the film, but we're still hearing a lot of dialogue over it. It's not like the music's fading as they're talking. It's a part of it. It's matching the tone of the characters. The plot of the film is very poignant to today. We're looking at an older generation of people that were resistant, the French 75, I believe what they're called in the film, but they were resistance warriors in L.A., and I don't want to spoil it, but things happen. They have to go away, and then they have the daughter that also becomes a part of the resistance generations later. And there's this whole beautiful chase scene at the end that I didn't see the film in IMAX. I saw it in standard at my local theater. But there were these scenes in the the third act at the end of the film where it's a car chase, and man, the way they capture those rolling hills, it's like camera shots and angles of cars. You watch a movie, and my mind always goes to, how many ways can you shoot the same object? So like, you know, you see people take photos in front of of the moon, or like of a certain object, like, and you go look it up. It's like, all right, there's 1,000 images of the same. The framing's the same. The angle's the same. It's the same. We know what it is. Paul Thomas Anderson did an incredible job of like introducing shots, car shots that I don't think I'd ever seen, like the POV that you're the front bumper of the car and you're not only you're just seeing these rolling hills and just the, there are these blind spots that are such the suspense that builds in that scene is so beautiful. And it comes to a literal crash, but a big moment at the end that has like two surprise moments back to back. And it's just like, what a great movie. I'm not going to spoil it, but I do plan on seeing this again. I'm behind on my movies. I still have to see quite a few. It's spooky season. Your boy loves a good horror movie. I'm going to go see some of the new stuff that's coming out. There's that Good Boy one that's a horror movie from the perspective of a dog, which sounds cute and terrifying. I'm very excited about that one, among a few others. I do want to say one of my favorite writing comedians and sketch comedians, Tim Robinson, his new show, The Chair Company, debuted on HBO Sunday night. And it's going to be, I believe, 8 episodes. I watched the first one last night, 2 nights ago, if you're listening to this. Incredible. I'm very excited about that. He had this incredible show called The Detroiters, which was 2 seasons by Netflix. And then I Think You Should Leave, which was also picked up by Netflix. And that's on, I believe, their 2nd or 3rd season now. But this is like his biggest production to date is The Chair Company on HBO. So go ahead and check that out. Yeah, guys, great episode. I'm back in the kitchen. If you've been following me on Instagram, oh, 2 things that happened that are pretty cool. I did a modeling gig for this really sick jacket company. I believe it's called Arc and Ivy. That's going to be, I'm so mad that I don't remember how to pronounce that last word. But it was sick. It was my friend Joe and his production company, Noise, reached out and they asked me to model. It was in Milan, New York. We took a sprinter to a farmhouse 2 hours north of the city. It was, you know, quite scenic. You could see the Berkshires in the distance. It was a beautiful day. The woman that owned the home, her ex-husband was a famous artist. So the home was filled with all of his paintings. There's all these custom woodwork in the house. He's built in walls that would come to a triangle, like a sharp angle, with built in shelving that would be all carved out, and then built in benches and just all the accents. The home was built in 2002. You would have thought it was built in 1840. It was beautifully designed and crafted. She is a professional interior designist, so she really did a great job finishing that project. It was a gorgeous home. I was in my preppy swag bag. I got to sit in like a vintage BMW, put on these like really expensive coats, some like cashmere sweaters, and some high pants and boots. Like you'll see the shoots at some point when they come out, and I'll share them. But it was preppy fall catalog aesthetic. It was cool to be a part of. I love doing gigs like that. What else happened? Oh, I the other thing I want to mention, I've been cooking again. I don't know if you saw, again, if you don't follow me on Instagram, I have been chef heavy. I have bought these pork chops that I finally was able to, I had the time to cook them, and I did it so well. I love when you're cooking and things that like aren't initially planned come through, and it just enhances, makes the meal better. They were thick boys, like over an inch thick, these pork chops. So they took a while, and I pan seared them. So I did olive oil and raw garlic cloves and the salt peppered the pork chops, because I made a chimichurri again. Of course, I'm in my chimichurri phase. So that was going to be the drizzle on the top, but in the pan, I had the high heat olive oil garlic in there for a minute, roasted garlic, slapped the bone in two pork chops on the pan seared them both sides for like 15-20 minutes, kind of looked at the peaked into the middle of one. You would have thought that thing was still on the cow. It was mooing, or what's pork? You thought it was oinking. So I fired up the oven, threw them in the oven, and then baked the rest. So they're pan seared. So we had the crispy, like real like pan, like that crispy garlicky olive oil taste on the outside, but the inside was like still the perfect amount of cooked. I didn't cook them too long. I didn't dry it out. It was perfect. I did that with a little side of broccolini and a mashed potato. It's beautiful. That's what I had last night as I watched the Chair Company. Yeah, so join me on this cooking journey, guys. I want new sauce recipes. I'm in my sauce bag. I like making stuff at home. Give me some new sauces and some suggestions to mess around with in the kitchen. It's been a really good time here the last few weeks. Other than that, guys, that's all I have to report. Life is going well, which is, you know, I'm very lucky to say that at this point in time. Biggest world news story is the hostages were released and there's a ceasefire agreement. For now, we'll see how long that is, but we have to celebrate the victories as they happen. And it's good to see families reunite. So I just really hope that there's some ounce of humanity and decency left in the midst of all the chaos that's going on. But today's not the time for that. My mouth is too dry and I can't ramble any longer. I love you guys. Happy Tuesday. My birthday is in a month, November 13th. So that means nothing. Just marking the days, guys, as they go. All right. Love you all. Good night. Peace.